from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Soul food on this Monday, and hopefully we'll get you started on the right path for your week. I'm here with Bob Pompiani, but city limits, what do we always know? If we start with Earth, Wind, and Fire, what does that generally mean?
Joe is not here.
No Joe. So it's just Bob.
Wait a minute.
And I.
He has a kibosh on that.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just he has his own start mood, you know, music to start, okay. You know? At the end of the day, he's not feeling well for the third day in a row or the third day without him. So we've got Bob and I, we've got a lot to get to, obviously. And that is the Pirates yesterday is where we're going to start. And Bob, it kind of felt like they let one go yesterday. It felt like
they let the whole series go.
Right.
This could have been a 3-game sweep.
Right. Well, here's the only reason I'll be a little bit. They should have won the series. But Friday's game, when you give up 3 home runs to the first 4 batters, you know, even though you battle back, you put yourself in a hole. You know, you want to tell me they lose that game? Okay. But yesterday, you have a 4-0 lead. Paul Skeens on the mound. And you really didn't do anything to push that lead to 5 or 6 runs, because I think if you would have, you'd win the game. There's some strategy things that people are going to talk about. But ultimately, my takeaway from yesterday's game, the most egregious thing that happened was allowing Colin Holderman to pitch to Jock Peterson when you had 2 lefties in the bullpen.
Absolutely.
Getting ready to go.
And he was not on his game, you could tell. And that's why you have the lefties. If not Beeks, then Chapman, somebody. And Jock Peterson has not had the same kind of numbers against lefties as righties. And that's a guy who can swing, one swing of the bat, change it, and that's exactly what happened. Couldn't happen, and it did happen.
Right. Well, and I think one of the things about it is Jock Peterson has been a guy who's been a thorn in your side, you know, when you've played him this year. So, to me, that was probably the most egregious thing that happened. And obviously losing 2 out of 3 to the Diamondbacks, it puts a lot of pressure on you now against the Padres. I mean, at minimum, you have to win this series. And quite frankly, if you lose this series and say you fall a little bit more behind in the wild card race, I think you start to become in that critical phase where you could fall out of it just as quickly as you put yourself in it. So that's probably big picture stuff to me. The big picture stuff is essentially you have really kind of put yourself behind the eight ball here, because now you're what, three and a half games behind. And I think if you look at realistically what's ahead of you, I'm not sure, you know, the Mets and the Diamondbacks, the Braves, the Padres, I'm not sure any of those teams are coming back to you. You know?
Well, there are too many. The problem, Paul, is there are too many.
Right.
If you were chasing one team, it's a whole different situation. You're chasing a basket of teams, and they all are not going to go bad at the same time. That's the problem.
Right.
So these head-to-head meetings take on even bigger significance, and that's why this series was one that was there for the taking. If not two of three, certainly three of three. And now they have another series coming up against a team that's one of those teams, San Diego. They're playing much better baseball. They're going to have six games with these with San Diego. Therefore, they need to reconstruct their pitching staff and go hard. Forget about saving arms. Forget about extra innings or extra days off. You go with your aces when you get a chance, which means Keller should pitch in this upcoming series. But we'll see what they do. But, yeah, yesterday, golden opportunity by the wayside. And the fact that they've lost five of Paul Skenes' 14 starts tells you a lot about them.
Yeah.
Because he's pitched well in just about every one of them.
It's exactly the thing is they have lost too many of Paul Skenes' starts, considering how good he's been, considering how, you know, how he's basically left pretty much every time he's left with, you know, only giving up one run or whatever. And I just feel like, you know, you got to, when you have your ace on the mound, and he's as good as Skenes has been, man, you got to win more than they've won with him starting.
Absolutely.
And they have, and they haven't. And that's a problem. If you go back to yesterday's game, I think one of the things that people have been talking about is the decision in the ninth to have Kiner Falefe bunt. You know, if we go back, we'll set up the scene here. Pirates are down, what were they down? 6-4. And the first two guys get on. So now you got first and second, nobody out, Kiner Falefe coming up. Kiner Falefe is a guy that you brought in pretty much because he's a really good hitter, right, Bob?
Well, he's 290. And this is going to be the secondary thing that you're going to bring up. Holderman was, to me, the number one thing that should have happened.
Right.
But, you know, Kiner Falefe is a guy who can do everything. He's a 290 hitter. He can, but he also can bunt. And now the thing becomes, what is bunt anymore? It's a lost art. You don't ask. There are a lot of people who can't bunt, shouldn't bunt, and should never be asked to bunt. He's one guy, however, because he is good at it, I think, based on the numbers that I saw. I don't necessarily mind it, but I know a lot of people do.
Well, I think one of the things about it is I don't know that bunting there gets you what you're really looking for.
Well, I mean, Reynolds, you can argue that would have been walked, but then you're putting a winning run on base. I don't know if they want to do that. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing if it's executed the right way.
Right, but if you think it through all the way, kind of go through all the way, what happens? Here's what I would tell you. Okay, if you bunt there and it's successful, you're pretty much taking the bat out of Reynolds' hands too.
But you also then, if you do that, you're putting the tie, or the go-ahead run on base. And, I mean, a lot of managers won't do that.
Well, but again, they're setting up a double play there because they have a two-run lead. It doesn't matter if they give up the, you know, well, actually, a double play ends the inning. Well, no, it wouldn't have ended. Well, it all depends. So, yes, it would have ended the inning. A double play ends the inning. It doesn't matter. That run doesn't matter. so they don't have to play the infield in.
No, I get it.
And so to me, they're probably going to take a hard look at walking Reynolds
and then
to set up the double play.
But it also sets up a potential disaster situation for them. If you get a gap shot, whatever the case may be, there are options both ways. So I don't necessarily – I have more of a problem yesterday with execution of a lot of things. The Holderman's different. I would not have allowed him to pitch to Jock Peterson because you have two lefties in there who are good at what they do. He has less success against them. I would have immediately made a change. But the other stuff, I mean, it's all about execution. You can call whatever you want to call here sometimes, but I think if you're a player, you need to execute what's called upon.
Right. I think that's the thing. It really is – I mean, this is one of those discussions where I don't know. Here's the thing. I don't think there's any argument for keeping there is no argument for keeping Colin Holderman in.
No. Cause I thought he was struggling anyway. He got a couple of bad calls. He also got one call on Marte, that was a ball, I thought, and he got a call for it. But point is, I wouldn't have taken, you know, these guys look at metrics all the time and look at, okay, lefty versus lefty, righty versus lefty, righty variety. You had information that would tell you that Jock Peterson's capable of ending the game with a swing or at least giving them the lead if you allow Holderman to continue. It's less likely if he makes a change there. So that's right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's thousands of those decisions.
Right. My thing is, the Colin Holderman decision is the worst decision. And, you know, you can argue, well, he pitched at 100 mile an hour on the black. It was a good pitch that Jock Peterson hit. I don't want to hear that. Because to me, he's not the guy right there in that situation that you want to have the ball. He's been bad for a few weeks. His last, six, seven outings have not been really particularly good. He's, again, the righty-lefty thing to me, I think it's very simple. You had Beeks up. You had Chapman up.
You have two lefties, one of whom you acquired in these situations. Right. And Chapman is, all right, he got hit the other day with a 103-mile-an-hour pitch that Josh Bell took.
Yeah.
I get it. But he's still a better option than Holderman at that point. And you also have to take into account, Paul, that Holderman has not been very good of late. He hasn't. He's had, beginning of the year was strong. There was a lot to, and all of a sudden things have not been as well. I don't know if he's injured. I don't know if there's something he needs to change, but he hasn't been that good. So in that situation, my gut would have said immediately change.
Right. I mean, I think that's the thing. It's important to me. It's important to note that I would have went to Chapman there.
Yeah.
I would have went to Chapman. I'm taking my chances with my best lefty.
I don't think people are going to question you if it doesn't work either.
Right. I'm going to Chapman to get Jock Peterson out, and then I'll worry about the next inning.
Mm-hmm.
You had them both up, which means you were willing to use them both.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I'm going to put my best out there. Always. I'm going to go with my best lefty against your left-handed hitter, and we're going to see what happens there. But the bunt situation, to me, I know why people are angry about it, and I understand that you don't want to give up an out and all that other stuff. The flip side of it is, too, if you successfully bunt there, I think you take the bat out of Reynolds' hand. So I don't like it probably for a different reason. And the different reason is I don't think it would have achieved what you wanted it to achieve other than you move two guys up, but then you put yourself in a double play situation with who? Cruz coming up, I think?
Yeah, but Cruz has had a knack for hitting some. I think the options are better for the Pirates there, in my opinion. I do. Even if they walk Reynolds, I'd load the bases and take my chances in that situation.
But again, you walk Reynolds – and then you've got the two lefties coming up, and they bring in Puck or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Puck's pretty good. I get it.
Against lefties.
Okay.
So my point is, if you successfully bunt there, what I'm saying is I don't think Shelton thought that through a whole lot. Because I think if you successfully bunt there, you basically take your best hitter out of the equation, and now you've got a really good lefty against lefties. I mean, overall, he's not great, but against lefties, he's really good. You've got now they go to that guy, and, you know, if Cruz strikes out, it doesn't matter. At that point, right now,
but
you need to
hit.
But
if he hits one in the gap or whatever, you can lose the game. Again, there's a risk on both sides here. So, these decisions are made. You have to make them. You have to be confident in them. And then it becomes the execution of what you've put into play. And Kiner Falefa can bunt. I know that. I've seen that. He's one of the few on the team who probably can do it. But he is hitting 290 or whatever he's hitting. So, he does represent maybe one of your best hitters in that situation. But there are a lot of reasons why they lost. I can make a list of about 100 reasons why they lost that game yesterday, and that's certainly, after Holderman, the biggest one. But it's debatable. I think the Holderman one is not debatable. I think it should have been an easy decision.
I just think that that to me is one thing where I feel like these late game decisions, in some ways, they probably even themselves out, Bob, because just last week we were talking about how Shelton pushed all the right buttons in two games to, right. You know what I mean? And it's funny, that happens when they work out, when they don't work out so well. That being said, some seem so obvious.
No, I know.
Like I think the Holderman decision was so obvious. There was no reason to keep him in the game to face Jock Peterson, who's been a real pain in the butt for, you know, the Pirates all series
especially
long.
Right-hand pitchers.
I mean, he's he's a good hitter. He's a veteran, knows how to handle a bat, knows how to swing with two strikes. You know, I mean, at least put your best lefty out there and say, okay, Jock, if you're gonna beat us, it's going to be like Josh Bell the other night where we're going to throw 103 miles an hour at you.
Right.
You know, and the difference is Josh Bell's a switch hitter, so he got to see it from the right hand, you know, from the right side. You're on the left side of the plate. Good luck.
Yeah.
That one seems very obvious to me. The other one, like I said, I think that bunting in the ninth inning was a bad idea. Because I, you know, for all the reasons that we sort of laid it out, but there's at least something to be said for, okay, well, if you bunt, you put the tying run in second and third, they're probably going to walk Reynolds.
And Cruz is, although he struggled yesterday, he's come up with some clutch hits at clutch times.
Right.
Any way you do it, it comes down to execution of things. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And they executed, and the Pirates didn't execute.
So,
especially with the pitch to Jock Peterson.
That's one thing I will say, okay, watching these games. Watching these games, the one thing I will say is this, Bob. The Diamondbacks' bullpen is not very good. Not at all, okay? But, in every other category, they are better than the Pirates.
Well, they certainly have a better hitting team, consistently.
They hit better. They hit in clutch situations better. They move runners up better. They run the bases better.
They're very good
better.
At bunting, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, they're very good at all the things you have to do to manufacture runs. They know they've got guys that can hit, so if they get guys into scoring position, they've got a chance to score a run, or two or whatever. They hit the ball better situationally. They hit the ball better, you know, with two strikes, it seems. They field better than the Pirates do. I mean, there's a reason why they were in the World Series last year. And there's a reason why they're in the, you know, wild card position or whatever this year, despite the fact that, Bob, how bad is that bullpen they have? I mean,
even A.J. Puck has not been very good. I mean,
every inning,
what
it's
your
like
expectations are.
You're holding on for dear life. Watching that bullpen.
But normally they get a big enough lead or their offense can, you know, make you forget that their bullpen has been questionable. Where the Pirates, you know, they have runs in certain games where they'll, you know, put an 8 to 10 spot, and then they'll go bare for the next three or four games. You know, you got to be more consistent with this, especially with Paul Skeens. That's the other thing, that when you get a 4-0 lead, I wanted to know what the live betting odds were when it was 4-0 Pirates over Arizona. Paul Skeens still on the mound, although he did have a lot of pitches yesterday, and I thought that was a little bit of a concern. He didn't seem to have, but still, he's up 4-0. They could have added on, too. They got that 4 spot, and then, you know, nothing until the end. So that was a game I bet you the odds were significantly in favor of the Pirates to win, and they just didn't. And there have been too many of those, especially when he's on the mound.
Yeah. That's the thing. The other interesting thing about it is you have a chance yesterday up 4-0. I thought there was one other point in the game where I kind of thought they might want to do something a little different. And that was they're up 4-0, and they had an opportunity early. I know what it was. They had an opportunity to move Reynolds over, and they didn't, and it turned into a double play. I thought they could have added a run there to get to 5-0. And again, I think if they get to 5 or 6-0, it's probably over. Even as well as the Diamondbacks.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
You know, something happens mentally to a team when you get down 5-6-0. So, I mean, overall, about the fifth inning or so, I was thinking about today's show, going over, wow, what are we going to do? You know, we're going to be talking about a big series win. And
singing Buckos all the way.
Yeah, they're going to go to, you know, they're going to be in, you know, right into the thick of it. But here's the thing. If they lose, God forbid if they get swept by the Padres, but even if they lose 2 out of 3, it's going to be really interesting to see how they manage the rest of the season. If they fall 4.5, 5, 5.5, 6 games out of first place, you know what that means, don't you? That means they're going to start playing games with Skeens and trying to slow down his inning count and all the other stuff. Maybe even slow down Jerry Jones a little bit, you know.
He's been slowed enough with this.
But if they don't feel like he's in it, if they don't feel like they're in it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. But again, they're still, you know, a bunch of teams haggle together. A 6-game win streak could change things in a hurry. But you got to get something like that going. There's no evidence that will happen. I'm more concerned, not so much about Skeens, but now Keller. Keller only had 60 pitches the other day. He should be ready to go in this Padres series at some point. Thursday, most likely, because they're off today, right? They're off today.
Yeah, they're
Tuesday,
off today.
Wednesday, Thursday. Well, he should pitch. These games are significantly more impactful on them in the wild card chase than the Dodgers and Seattle, even though they're all important. But, I mean, you got to beat the head-to-head teams that you're involved with.
Right.
And that's how it happens. And that's how you make up ground in a hurry.
Well, I think that's the thing. If they sweep, then they get back into it. But my thing is, what I'm a little nervous about is if they fall out of it a little bit, right? And let's face it, they're 3.5 back, like you said. They've got a lot of teams in front of them, right?
Yeah, and they're all not going to go bad at the same time.
But here's the thing. They're facing their after San Diego, they got a 6-game streak stretch in Los Angeles and then in San Diego.
Right. The San Diego games are much more important.
Right. But then, I mean, it really doesn't get any easier. They play Seattle, who's got one of the best records in America, in the American League, right? Followed by Texas, who is obviously has a losing record, but they were in the World Series last year.
Yep.
There's not really a soft landing coming for them.
They had a chance to be 4 games back in the Central by the end of this weekend as well, because Milwaukee kept losing.
Yeah.
You know, I was sitting out by the bullpen for this game, for Friday's game and for Sunday's game. It was both infuriating losses. And Zangrilli absolutely lit the world on fire in the postgame yesterday. It was one of the best postgame shows I've ever heard. Jalen Beeks was warming up, and he was ready, like, well before, in advance of Jock Peterson. And this is the most – Torey Lovello won a couple of these games for Arizona. I mean, there's a reason why he was the National League manager in the All-Star game. There's a reason why this team went to the World Series last year. He won them at least one of these games the way that he managed. And I don't understand, because Derek Shelton contradicted himself. We didn't want to use Beeks because he pitched 2 days in a row, but yet he had to come in anyway, and they already had him up.
If he's up, the indication is then he's okay.
What is the purpose of getting Beeks up if you're not going to use him for that specific situation?
Well, they had two lefties. Both of their lefties. Chapman was starting to throw.
Chapman was already starting to throw in the game as well.
I mean, that's the point. You're two lefties.
And you haven't pitched Marco Gonzalez in a while, too. I know you're not going to use him in that type of situation. That's still another left-handed arm.
I mean, you got
to. He hasn't pitched in a week and a half.
Well, they used Woodford Reserve, didn't they?
That's another thing that got me. Why are you using Woodford in a one-run game with a guy who's facing the heart of the order?
Right.
It's El Marte, the top-10 hitter in all baseball, and he hits a home run at exactly what's going to happen.
Especially with an off day today.
Yes, Bednar.
You've got a chance to rest guys today and reset
that's,
your bullpen.
That's where I get back to one of my pet peeves about so much emphasis on why you can't use this guy. This guy's down today. He could have six pitches and he's down for a week. You know, I mean, come on now. At some point, these games are more meaningful than any other of the season. You have to throw all that stuff away and you have to start putting your best people. And if it means that Beeks is going to be out there for three straight days, so be it. If it means that David Bednar can pitch more, yeah, you're concerned about him, but you also have to win. And when you have a chance to win, all hands on deck, in my view, and I'm never going to change that. I don't care what books say. I don't care what metrics say. I don't care what anyone thinks. That has gotten too far out of the realm of reality. You have a guy who pitches 12 pitches one day, 20 the next, and he can't throw an inning to a batter. Give me a batter. One thing, go out, do it.
And we talked about how Reynolds was not in motion when Cruz ended up hitting the double play in the second inning. It didn't end up factoring in. But why don't you send Reynolds in a corner situation, first and third in the ninth inning, with one out? Because they are not guarding Michael A. Taylor at third base. They're giving him a pretty good walking lead. Why not send Brian Reynolds to second base? It's not like Rowdy Tellez is running. In the event that they throw down the lead that Michael A. Taylor is getting at third, he might potentially be able to go home. They're giving Brian Reynolds second base. And a base hit would score two runs and win the game. Another one, I just don't get it.
Well, I would say this. The other part of it is they've had a difficult schedule out of the break, and they've played 15 games. They're 8-7.
Right. You needed to go more than
that. It's not good enough.
So what I'm saying now is their next 15 games, San Diego, Los Angeles, San Diego, Seattle, and then at Texas, those next 15 games. I mean, if they go 8-7, that's not going to be good enough. I think most people probably would sign up for 8-7 right now against that group. But if you lose, if you go, God forbid, you go 7-8, I mean, that to me is you know, again, that, so this next 15 games is critical. I think it's critical from the standpoint of, are they going to finish the season like really trying to win games? Meaning, you know, are we going to see Paul Skenes go every fifth day? Are we going to see Jared Jones, you know, push back into the rotation and all the other stuff? Or are they basically going to go into, you know, soft shutdown mode? Because, we're 500.
Well, if they do it, you're not going to hear it from them.
They'll never say that. You'll see it, of course. They will never say that.
And I can't see Jared Jones being shut down completely for the whole rest
of
the year.
He's been out for how long?
Well, he is throwing bullpens and everything. Right. I would imagine, though, Bob, that they want to give him some innings in September just so that they lengthen out his innings for this year so that they don't have the same entire issue next year.
Well, again, I don't think they're going to shut him down.
These issues are man-made by people in metrics divisions.
Yes.
It never used to. I've talked to too many ex-baseball players.
I don't think they're going to shut him down. What I mean is, I think what they're going to do is they're going to be soft about how they use him.
Of course.
And the same thing with Skenes. And I also think that they could do this thing where they, well, let's give him another couple of bullpens. You know, they lose a couple of games. Let's give him a couple of bullpens, more bullpens before we bring him back to, you know, lessen the innings and stuff. That's my biggest fear with the Pirates this year, is that I think they're towing a line right now between being in contention and being, you know, a team that views themselves as not realistically in it anymore. And if that happens, I just, I'm, I just don't know what we're going to see. I mean, the good thing about Skeens is in September, you know, if you pitch him all your at home, he helps your attendance. You know what I mean? Which is always a good thing.
But only, I think, if they're still, you know, relevant. I don't know that people are going to go out in September just because he's pitching the way they would if he was pitching for a game that meant they're one game out of a wild card. This is it. You have a chance to pull yourself into it. If they're 6-7 games out, I don't know that people are going to respond that way. They've seen what he is. They know what he's capable of. But they also know the Pirates have not won all the games that he's pitched, and he's been good enough to win just about every one of them.
Yeah. Well, again, I just, you know, they're going to keep using him. They're going to keep bringing him in. But I just fear that this, you know, this next 15 games, if it doesn't go the way they want it to go.
Well, I would have said that about the first 15 that we just saw. I thought going into this, given where they were, 10-5 was the number I was looking at. That way you can at least put yourself in a one game out of a wild card. You know, keep yourself in this realistically more so than what it is now. Now, out of the next 15, as you described, if they do another 8-7, they're going to be exactly where they are, if not worse. They have to go, I would say, out of 15, 11-4 to me, to make up the kind of ground that's going to be necessary. So some of these other teams, which are all clumped together with them and ahead of them, are going to have to start losing. But many of them have schedules that are easier than the Pirates. Go look at them. You'll see. So this is more of a daunting task now that they lost 2 of 3 to Arizona.
Yes. Like I said, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's going to be really difficult to go into Los Angeles and into San Diego. Six games.
And Seattle's no bargain either.
That's what I mean. You've got 6 games against San Diego coming up. Let's say you go 3-3.
Again, it does not help you.
You go 3-3 against San Diego and 1-2 against the Dodgers. Now you're 4-5. You know what I mean?
You're done. And you're done before you reach September because you're going to be 4.5, 5 games out at that point. It's too much to climb with the way that Arizona, San Diego, and the Mets are playing.
Yeah.
And you still have to overtake St. Louis.
By the way, the Giants are knocking on the door. They were once thought of. Now they're
a game back.
They're
only
a game back, you know, and they've played reasonably good. So, I don't know. It's kind of a frustrating day in many ways. Because yesterday, as of the 4th or 5th inning, I thought we would be talking about something completely different than we are. That's what I would tell you. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding, here's a rundown of what's happening on today's show. We obviously are talking Pirates. We've got Steeler topics, another Brandon Ayuk development, I guess. I don't know.
No, that story needs to go away. Unless it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen. It's been talking about for 3 months, but we have a preseason game coming up. First one, Friday night, looking forward to it just because we've already seen the Texans in action.
Yes.
You'll get a chance to see these new quarterbacks and how they will spread the wealth around in terms of who.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Plays.
And a fly ball left field. Back is Reynolds toward the track, approaching the wall, and it's gone. An opposite field three-run homer for Jock Peterson to give the Diamondbacks the lead. 5-4 in the seventh inning. Pop up. Shallow right. Coming in is Carroll, and he will make the catch. And the D-backs take the series. Final score, Arizona 6, Pittsburgh 5.
Did you hear that sigh?
At least it wasn't an oh no, oh no, like when Neil Walker when they.
Yeah, I pretty much summed it up.
Well, anyway, we do have Derek Shelton from yesterday, and Derek Shelton was very angry about a lot of things. There was so much, I think, that it's only a 3-minute clip. We should listen to what he had to say because there's so many things to react to in what he said.
Delty, why stick with Holdy over Beeks in the seventh?
Yeah, I mean, Beeks had thrown 2 days in a row. I mean, we ended up having to go to him. I mean, he had a 100-mile-an-hour fastball away. Holdy's got to be better. I mean, he's got to make a pitch. He's pitched in that spot for us all year, and it didn't work.
Is he not confident with the fastball right now?
He hit a fastball. Fastball's 100. I mean, if you go back and look at the first couple pitches of that inning, look at the locations of them.
So, Beeks was too tired to come
no,
in.
No, that's not what I said. What I said was, made the decision, we got to finish the pitch. Beeks pitched the next inning.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Skeens, his command seemed maybe not his best today. What did you assess?
Yeah, he was erratic. He was kind of all over the place. I mean, it's for the first time we've really seen him scatter the ball a little bit.
What was the thought process with the sacrifice bunt there with kind of Flyfoot in the ninth?
Play for the tie and then get Bednar in the game and see where we could go there. You know, I mean, he's a tough at bat, so I think that was, and he's usually, you know, he's done a pretty good job bunting throughout his career. And it was a tough pitch.
What'd you make of the Reynolds and Cruz at bats there in the ninth?
I mean, Reynolds really good at bat. I mean, Cruz, he fouled off, what, 6 pitches, 6 fastballs at 97 and 98, and, you know, he beat him with the fastball away, but, you know, overall they battled.
Shelty Holderman striking out Marte. Did that change your mind at all?
No.
Just a second for Isaiah. What could you make of his early start and how well he did with those two RBI through two?
Yeah, I mean, he and Dela Cruz both. I mean, Dela Cruz had a big RBI early, you know, good at bats. I mean, they're going to be a big part of what we're doing over the next 2 months.
We were talking about Holderman before. I think at the end of June, he's like a 1.27 ERA. Like, in a little spotty, started July, found it. Seem to wobble here lately. Was there any consistency between the two tough patches he's had?
Yeah, middle of the plate or on the plate, you know, not finishing. I think that's the story of the two games we lost in this series. We did not execute pitches with two strikes, and we have to. If you leave the ball on the plate, I mean, this is one of the best offenses in baseball. You leave the ball on the plate with two strikes, they're going to do damage, and we saw that.
Consider moving into lower leverage?
No, I don't know. We're going to have to figure out. I mean, I'm a little pissed about how this game went to begin with, so try to figure that out during the off day.
Any thought on stealing Reynolds in the ninth in that situation when he was on first?
Yeah, good thought. Cruz lines into a double play, then everybody's like, hey, why'd you go, you know, why are you going into a double play? We're gonna get Dela Cruz versus Puck in that situation, and we know that. So it's one of those 50-50 things. But, yeah, I did debate it a little bit.
There's always a debate, especially with analytics, about bunts in general, giving away and out. That was a guy that hadn't closed a whole lot. Any thought about just letting the guy go?
Yeah, we thought about it and didn't do it.
What else are you ticked about, Derek, besides the outcome?
The outcome of the game.
Is there something umpire-related you're talking about there?
I'm not answering that question. You guys watched the game. You watched Holderman's inning. And then we give away a situation where we throw a pitch and then have a violation after that? I don't understand that. I don't understand how that. I understand how the rule works. I have never seen that before. We throw a pitch and then there's a violation after a pitch is thrown that's taken away? Don't understand that. That's not in the rule book. Sorry, it's not. If he's on the field and it happens, he's not on the field. Their manager. So if the pitch is delivered, how does that happen? I don't know.
Well,
that was as feisty as Derek Shelton has been. He is normally a very gregarious, you know, he's an affable person. He'll talk to you. You guys have him on every Tuesday, and you will again tomorrow.
Right.
So.
And I think the biggest thing about it is he was feisty throughout the whole thing.
Well, that's one. I mean, there are a lot of them like that over the course of 162. But given that one, as we said, 4-0, you're up. Skeens is on the mound. It's a huge game. It's at home. And you let it get away. But he really came down hard on Colin Holderman. And quite frankly, you can see why. I mean, over his last 15 innings, Jason Mackey put this line up. 12 earned runs, or 14 innings, 12 earned runs, 9 walks. He's been all over the place, which is why I didn't understand that answer about why he wouldn't go to Beeks, but he did go to Beeks, but it was after the damage was done. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you feel that way about him and he's given you nothing but worries over his last 15 appearances, then you should have made a move right then and there. And that's the way it goes. I don't know why the logic is to keep him in for the whole inning. That's the game's on the line.
Well, I thought, you know, he probably had a valid complaint about the taking the strike off the board play or whatever happened where, you know, the manager came out. But here's what I'm going to tell you about this whole umpiring thing. I would say over the last 10 to 15 games, the calling of balls and strikes has been an embarrassment.
I think it's been an embarrassment all year.
But I mean,
it's gotten worse now
really,
because the games have become more significant.
I'll tell you what, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. We're watching these games a lot closer than we have been. But it is absolutely incredible. And here's the thing. I think it was the inning right after that whole thing happened. There was a pitch to O'Neill Cruz that was so far in the strike zone, like, there's no chance that it was a 50-50 pitch. It was a strike. And he called it a ball. And why that's significant, because it made it 3-0 instead of 2-1 against a guy like O'Neill Cruz. And then, I think the very same at bat, he struck out on a pitch that was, or his second strike maybe, was a pitch that was like 6 inches off the plate.
Yes.
And it's like,
if you're a batter, you have no idea. And that's the problem. Because you'd want to try to work a strike zone. You want to try to, you know, work the count in your favor. But when you get calls, and again, it goes both ways, Paul. I'm not going to sit here and say the Pirates were the only ones who were victimized. Ketel Marte struck out on one that I thought was a ball. It goes both ways. The pitch right. box really makes it worse for those of us watching, only because you see exactly, frame by frame, basically, where these pitches are. Umpires don't have that luxury. So I think it's made it more difficult on umpires from that point of view. If you erase the pitch box, you wouldn't probably be as critical. You still could be critical, but not as. But it went both ways yesterday. But it's hard as a batter to know what's coming. And when you're up in a count 3-1, you're looking for a pitch, and you don't swing at it because you think it's ball four, and it turns out that it is ball four, and it's called a strike. Now you're at the pitcher's, you know.
Right.
Things change.
I think if you are a batter today, how do you know what the strike zone is?
You're guessing, depending on the umpire.
You don't know what the strike zone is. That's the biggest problem that you have when you have umpires that are all over the place. What is actually the strike zone?
Yeah, I don't know. I am.
If you're a batter, and you can see the frustration on some of these hitters, you know, pitches that are low and outside or low or whatever are being called strikes, and then you can see some of the frustration of the pitchers when they're painting the corners and they're called balls. That's a problem. So I think that while Shelton has a legitimate beef about the way that whole thing went down, I think every manager should sit out the discussion about balls and strikes and the way they're called.
Normally he does. He doesn't necessarily rip it one way or the other or say, but, you know, in this case, he did.
Who do we got on the line, City Limits?
Joe in the car.
Joe in the car. How you doing?
Hey, boys. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
disgusted. That's what. Paul, you made a great point. Nobody knows in this league what a strike is or what a ball is because they're not consistent enough. Bob, you made a great point, and I'm going to take this. Throw the analytics out the door. It almost goes back to Little League. It goes back to Little League. If I'm trying to win a playoff game or a tournament game, you really think I'm going to go with the kid who can't really throw strikes, or I'm going to go with the kid who can throw the hardest ball across the plate and strike everybody out and get them out? This is not – you go with your – you don't go with a guy who's struggling. You go with the guy.
But you also – if he's up, he's going to be used, and he was used. That's the frustrating
correct.
Part.
Correct, and he's better against what's the batter?
Jock Peterson.
Horrible. Peterson was horrible against lefties, and you don't bring a lefty. You don't bring a lefty in. I don't understand. It was so frustrating. And then to hear him on his news conference, you got to take it. Look, you get credit for when you make great calls. You got to take that one on the chin. Shelton, I needed to take that one on the chin. That was all him. You second-guessed yourself from the seventh inning on. You second-guessed yourself.
Right. There's no question. There's no question about it. In my mind, there's none. It really is one of those things where you have to. You really have to try and figure out if you're Shelton. Are you going to be beholden to your little chart and how many innings you want to pitch guys? And I guarantee you that's what it came down to. Well, if we can get Colin Holderman
He didn't say that, though. I don't
know. No, but I'm just saying, if you look at how he manages, you know what I mean?
Well, generally, they all do. This is the frustrating
thing
about how it's
going. That's what's frustrating.
It's like the new managerial book 2.0. This is how we do it today, boys. If you get 9 pitches, you can't pitch the next day. You got to be down. If you have 20 pitches, forget it. We ain't seeing you for a week. Come on. In games like this, when you've dug yourself a hole, guys are available. I'm not worried about their pitch count. I'm not worried about how many days in a row I use them. Generally speaking, yes, I would be. But in these situations, you've got to throw that book out.
All right, City Limits, who's next?
We got one more. Here's Montavious in Wexford.
Hey, Paul and Bob.
What's up, Montavious?
Montavious, yes. So that game yesterday, and to go back and blaming the umpires, you can't. It's easy for us on TV to see the balls and strikes, but when it's 100 miles per hour, give these umpires credit. Don't blame them. You got to protect the plate. It goes back to Little League, Pony League, Colt League, and Shelton has the blame for this loss. You can't play Holderman when you got Beeks out there.
Or Chapman.
And, or Chapman, any of them. But Shelton, please take the blame. Please be a man. That's all I got.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know. He kind of threw Holderman under the bus a little bit, said he's got to be better. And he did, you know, he was upset about the umpiring or the, you know, a few of the strikes, but I didn't feel like he was overly pushing the blame on other people. I mean, I do think he was very defensive about all of his moves that he made. He was very defensive about them. There's no question about that. But, you know, managers, here's the thing about managers. Sometimes you got 162 games. You get second-guessed 162 times. You've got to defend everything you do.
Well,
it's unlike football where you got 17 games to be second-guessed.
Yeah. I think there's an equally responsible part of this that goes to the player's execution, like he said. But you also know the player hasn't been executing. You bring him in that situation. Now, this was the seventh inning, and originally it was down at the latter part of the order. He wanted to get through that to get to the eighth. I get it. But in doing so, you can't forget, you're still trying to protect the two-run lead, and you got two guys on and a very dangerous hitter up, and you can't go by what you think you're going to go. That you need an immediate adjustment and just say, Holderman doesn't have it today, I'm taking him out. We'll worry about the eighth when we get to the eighth. If you worry about the eighth after you give up the seventh, then you have to worry about the bottom of the ninth. You know, that situation called for him to be out. He was not impressive to me. I don't care he threw 100 miles an hour.
Right.
His location of pitches the last several games for him has not been good.
No.
And he's generally a very good pitcher, but he's just gone, you know, a rough spell.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at what he's done recently, it hasn't been very pretty. I mean, his last four outings, he's given up at least one run. You know, before that, he was pretty much a lockdown. Mm-hmm. And his last four outings, he's also given up four home runs. Seven runs, four home runs. You know, he's got to be better than that. And actually, if you look at it, it's seven runs. It's seven earned runs, eight runs total. And, you know, four home runs. That's not good. Also, right. You know, one strikeout in four appearances. That's not good. So he was really good for a period of time, but they've got to figure out whatever that magic was. You know what I mean? That made it work. They've got to figure that out.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.